Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk. And we are live from the beautiful WAM studios here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And, it's going to be a great day today. Purdue's going to beat Ohio State. Yeah, I know. Well, you were not giving them much of a chance last week either when they beat Michigan State, were you? So I did have my big Purdue flag out on the front porch, so I'm going to put it back out again today when I get home. So who's Michigan playing today, Derek?
They're playing Penn State in Happy Valley.
That one could be a tough one, couldn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be a modified wideout, and I mention this because there's actually going to be part of the crowd in Happy Valley that's going to wear blue. That they're doing it like their helmets. It's predominantly white with a blue stripe in the middle. So it's a modified whiteout. But the good thing is Michigan won't be playing them at night, because that would be more scary. I wouldn't give Michigan much of a chance at all. But this way during the day, they've got a shot.
Okay. Well, we'll see. It's interesting to watch the dynamics this year with the different teams, the surprises with Purdue. You knocked off number 2, Iowa, which was probably overly or highly rated at that point. I mean, it was not that they were not that great, but they beat number 2, Iowa, and they beat number 9, was it? Michigan State was number 9 or 6 last week.
Yeah, Michigan State, they were ranked 6th in the college football playoff poll.
Okay, with an emphasis on were. They're like 9 or 10 or something like that. So we'll see what happens. This is not football talk. This is Trigger Talk. So I want to say, hey, I heard on the way in the new promo that you did, Derek, with the binary triggers. So that was kind of cool. Thank you.
Yeah, sure thing. Oh, and I should mention that Michigan State was actually ranked 4th. I made a mistake.
Oh, last week?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yep. Well, wow. Then top 5 teams they've knocked off. And what is Ohio State ranked today?
I believe they're ranked 4th now in the newest college football playoff poll.
Okay, so we got our work ahead of us. I can remember, one of the years, my junior year maybe, in college we played Ohio State, and Purdue went over, and we marched in the band. The band went over, too. Every year you would go, and you'd march at a couple of different away games. I marched up here at Michigan twice, at Michigan State once, and marched at Ohio State, Northwestern, Notre Dame, all sorts of other ones. But the thing is that it was one of these days where we had sleet. It was ice, and we actually had, thank goodness we had our heavy wool uniforms on, but it actually encased us in ice. We were crackling when we marched. It was a lot of fun. I mean, and it was about the same time of year, and of course, we're predicting possibly some snow this weekend, so we could see something like that happen. Let's see. In Michigan, we've only got one gun show, but it's not bad. It's at Houghton Lake. So you guys heading up north for deer season, for the start of firearm season on Monday, you can stop off and buy something at the Northern Center in Houghton Lake, Michigan. Let's see. Ohio's got a bunch. We got the Maumee Valley Gun Show in Bowling Green, the Medina Gun Show in Medina, Ohio, Cleveland Gun Show in Mentor, the New Regal Gun Show in New Regal, Ohio, the Cincinnati Gun Show in Sharonville, and the Zanesville Special Ops Gun Show in Zanesville, Ohio. So, wow, how about that? We've got nothing in Missouri this week, and we've got two in New York, the NEACA Polish Community Center Gun Show, and the Spring Valley Gun Show in Spring Valley, New York. Oh, the Polish Community Gun Show is in Albany, New York, okay? Very interesting. I thought, what the heck? I kept checking to see about CPL numbers, and it kept showing October 4th, October 4th, October 4th. And finally, I clicked on it, and they had the new ones up, but they didn't bother changing the title. I want to say, just get on with it, okay? Now, you know, it could very well be that they were waiting for Dana Nessel to tell them, go ahead and put the new CPL numbers up. But she still was having a hangover from the Michigan State game. I think you probably all saw that. The do as I say, not as I do chief law enforcement officer in the in Michigan. Oh my goodness, she had two Bloody Marys, and that caused her to pass out. It's like, yeah, right, okay. So anyway, the numbers for November 1st are 764,806, which is only about 900 down in the pendings, from 71 to 6,200 in pending. So what in the heck is going on? A, they're dragging it out, and I want to say the numbers are now they've still grown a lot over the last year, but we've had about probably 70,000 new CPL holders. Okay, well, you can't just ignore them and have 7,000 or 6,200 of them pending all the time, and only give us, you know, 3,000 a month or something like that. I want to say something's wrong there still. I want to mention the pre-Black Friday sale. Do not forget to go and see Bill Kahn at the Ann Arbor Arms shows that they're having coming up. They're going to have a Black Friday sale, but they're having a pre-Black Friday sale on the 20th, and Bill Kahn's going to be there, and he's going to have his custom-made holsters and belts and things like that. So you want to go see him. He's been a great friend of the station for many, many years now. Let's see. Sight in your rifles. I actually did that this week. I went out and sighted in my rifles. Now, they always say it's a good idea to sight in your rifles. Now, because you don't know what happened to them in between. Well, I know what happened to mine. They sat in the gun safe, okay? And they were just fine. But I went to sight them in. I did, though, I sighted them in a little shorter distance this year. I normally sight in for 100 yards. But at my son's, where we do shooting, we've got about 50 yards to 25 to 50 yards is about the max you get, where he has his pond and his food plot and things like that, and where they come out of the woods. And I mean, it's just like a perfect spot to be set up. And so I sighted him in at 50 yards, actually 50 and 25, which is kind of interesting because you do have to plan that. Typically, when you're sighting in at a longer distance, depending on the firearm you're shooting, some of them shoot flat trajectory, some of them are slower, heavier rounds, and they have every gun has a ballistic trajectory. Okay, you know, now what is that, you ask? Well, that's where the it's rising to a certain point, and then it falls. Okay, and you have to typically plan for that when you're sighting in for 100 yards or 200 yards or 500 yards or whatever the long distance is that you shoot. But when you're shooting at a short range, you're usually still on the upslope of the trajectory. So what might be perfect at 50 yards, you might have to sight in an inch low at 25 yards. Now, that doesn't seem like very far, but you know what? That's kind of like brush hunting. And that's why it's good to have big, heavy bullets that you use. We're not talking like when you're out there with your 270 and you've got a 130 grain bullet, or you're talking like somebody with a 6 millimeter with a 90 grain bullet or something like that. We're talking big hunkin'. I sighted in the Ruger 77. It's an M77 in 44 mag, and that's with a 240 grain round, and also 200. This year I'm trying some Hornady FTXs in 225 grain, and both of them, those had the same point of impact, the 240 and the 225. And then I also sighted in my Alexander Arms AR-15. What, you say? You're hunting with an AR-15? Oh, nobody hunts with an AR-15. Give me that break. Those are all just deadly assault weapons. You don't. No, the platform can handle many different rounds, and that's why they came up with things like What do I want to say? 450 Bushmaster and actually the 50 Beowulf, okay? And some of the other larger bore ones that people are using now. And also different things like 277 Wolverine and 270 Valkyrie and all these different rounds that people are experimenting with for the AR platforms. And also you add in the fact that Michigan, like so many states, allows straight wall cartridges up to, I think it's 2 inches, 1.8 inches of cartridge length and overall length, or of the cartridge length, the overall length, it doesn't matter. But they have to be a minimum of 35 caliber, and you're pretty much limited then by the length of the cartridge and the straight wall cartridge. So I was sighting in my Alexander Arms AR-15 in 50 Beowulf, which is a 50 caliber, kind of it's based off of Action Eagle, 50 Action Eagle or Action Express round. And it's got a 50 caliber slug, and it is a big, heavy round. I've actually, I just ordered some powder for it to be able to load up some new rounds. But I'm using 400 grain soft points, okay? And that's what I used last year, and it was very, very effective against the deer last year. And it will be again this year. But I've got I had gotten some new projectiles. I'm excited about ones, different 50 caliber FTXs, like 350 grain FTXs, and I think 400 grain Sierra hollow points. I mean, just some really fun ones, but I couldn't find any powder. And interestingly enough, I got it on my, I have a personal Facebook page. I actually have a Trigger Talk Facebook page, but I don't do anything with it. I hope it's still active. I'll have to check that out. But I had a TriggerTalkRadio.com page, but also this person looked me up apparently on Facebook on my private page and sent me a message. And it was about the end of October 28th or something. And I didn't notice it because I'm not on Facebook all the time. But this person said, "We've got it in stock." And I looked and it said the Detroit Ammo Company. And I thought, well, that's neat. I haven't heard of the Detroit Ammo Company. And I noticed, and I did call them, actually. I called them Monday morning, and I said, hey, do you guys have a storefront that I can come to? Because I see you've got an online presence, and you've got a contact number and an address. And their address is a post office box in South Lyon. But I don't know where their manufacturing facility is. But at any rate, they said, no storefront. Everything is just online. So I went ahead and I ordered some. They actually had some Lil Gun, Hodgson Lil Gun, or L-I-L-G-U-N, Lil Gun, okay? And that's kind of an unusual powder, but it's what you use for 50 Beowulf, okay? And so now, it was not as cheap as it used to be. Okay. Nothing is as cheap as it used to be. Thank you, Joe Biden. Well, actually, the whole thank you, Democrats, for the gun prices going up and stuff. But the thing is that you just can't find powder. Okay. And I have everywhere, I bet you I've checked 50 different websites and stuff. I could find powder in Canada, but they can't ship it to the U.S., okay? Apparently, Canada doesn't have any powder shortages, but you'd have to go over there and get it, and I don't know about the rules about bringing powder back across the border. I know you can bring certain guns and ammo back and forth and stuff like that, but I don't know about powder. So the thing is that they had it. So I ordered 2 pounds Hodgson Lil Gun, which I am anxiously awaiting. Now, the only problem is, now this is something you need to figure out when you're ordering things online like that, is that they have a hazmat fee that they have to pay for shipping it. And I did play around with it a little bit, and it's the same hazmat fee whether you're buying 1 pound or 20 pounds, okay? So, yeah, $39, okay, was expensive, but I figured, So I ordered a couple pounds, and I'm looking forward to it coming. I cannot wait so I can set up my dies and get out there and start manufacturing some. Then I start the whole thing where I'll try the round, and then I'll figure out which one's the most accurate. And maybe I don't have to worry about that with a 50 cal. I guess it does expand to an inch and a quarter, so I don't have to be like, you know, five rounds through the same hole with that, because you can actually spread it out a little bit. So at any rate, Detroit Ammo Company, I just found, and I'm excited about them. So if you were the guy that sent me a Facebook, give me a call and tell me about your company, okay? Let's see. And that is 734-882-1600 for anybody who wants to give a call in here today. Let's see. Now, I was reading, this was an interesting thing. I'm going to pose a question to you as listeners. And I was reading one of the forums this week, as I typically do. I know it's a tough job to have to peruse the gun forums and gun news and stuff like that. Somebody has to do it, and I try to do it so that you don't have to do it. But then I try to give you the news and stuff on the weekend. But also, this one intrigued me. It was a question that it posed to the forum people, the forum members, and it said, what gun were you most excited to try or buy that turned out to be a big disappointment? So I started thinking about that. Now, are there guns that I have that I'm disappointed in? And actually, what typically happens is if I buy something and I don't like it, or I'm less than impressed with it, or maybe I bought it. Remember, I told you I have Rugeritis, okay? I buy a lot of Rugers, okay, because I like so many of the new products that they come out with. But there are ones that they've come out that I've kind of, that I thought they missed on, okay? And often they come out with a later version. Like, I'll give you an example, though. I went through my list of guns. I actually printed it out today so I could go through. And as I went through, I looked at it, and I thought, nope, you got to know that when you talk about liking something, you like it for different reasons, okay? So, like, some of the ones that I was disappointed in, the Ruger SR22P. That's the little, it's a little tiny 22 that I thought would be kind of fun and good for training and stuff like that. However, and we actually bought a bunch of them at the club to use for training, and they've been fine for that, but I was just not impressed with it at the time. And it's kind of reminiscent, the Walther P22, they made one. They looked almost identical. There was a whole bunch of tiny little 22s coming out at that time, some of which were not that great, like Sig Mosquito. I know that Theron had a Sig Mosquito, and he still talks about that being like the worst gun he ever had. Okay, and he actually ended up getting rid of it. And the thing is that you buy guns on reputation sometimes. Oh, Sig Sauer, that's got to be a great gun. I'm going to get a Sig Mosquito. And it looks really cool, okay? But then you find out that, they're not very reliable. You know, they don't always hit right on. And not in shooting terms. I mean, like, the companies don't always hit a home run every time. So I was disappointed in the Ruger SR22P, and I got rid of that to a friend. And I say friend loosely. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, for some people, those are great guns, okay? But I have so many guns that when I think about it, I don't need to keep something that I'm slightly disappointed in. A Savage 93-17. I really wanted one of those when those 17 HMRs first came out. And then I bought it, this is fine. And I shot it, and it was very accurate and stuff like that. And then I put it in the safe, and it sat there for 3 years, and I never touched it. So a friend asked about a gun to shoot groundhogs with, and so I sold it to him. Ruger LCP-1. By the way, all of these guns went to the same people, the same guy. I don't sell very many guns, okay? But when I do, it's usually a friend that he's happy with them. A Ruger LCP-1. I loved that gun, but I like the LCP-2 better. So I got rid of the LCP-1 and I got the LCP-2 because it has a better trigger pull. Same thing with the Ruger LC-9. When it first came out, they had these long double-action trigger pulls, and I did not like them. So I was excited about the small single-stack 9, but I didn't like the trigger pull. Well, now the LC-9S is a great gun, and there's so many other ones. So it's kind of an evolutionary process. One of the ones I got rid of now, I got rid of the Glock 17. Well, at the time, I had like 5 or 6 Glocks, and I was like, no, do I really need another Glock? I don't. And actually, that one went to my brother because he needed something to do some training with his wife and his daughter. So a Glock 17 and 26 went to them. Not that I was particularly disappointed with them. But so I went through these other guns, and I'm looking at them, and I'm going, well, do I like that one yet? Well, why would I like a Mosin Nagant M44, okay, because it's the ugliest pistol in the world with the hardest trigger pull. Where else can you get that combination, okay? So at any rate, so I guess I'm not talking about just function because I love all the rest of my guns, and some of them are ugly, and some of them are just shooters, and some of them are beat up, you know, when I come across them and I pick them up, and then I have one that my grandson loves, the Uzi. It's an IWI Uzi in .22 caliber, and he loves that gun. Okay, I think he's the only one who ever shot it. I maybe shot it once. Okay, but he loves it, so I keep it. He'll get it someday. Anyway, so I'm kind of posing this question to all of you guys. What is a gun that you were excited about buying or trying, and then it turned out to be a big disappointment? I'd like to hear from you guys. Okay, so let's see. Iconic Firearms brand is giving up on New York. Hooray, Remington Arms is moving to Georgia. Okay, you know, Springfield moved to Tennessee. Some of these other ones are leaving all over the place. Well, Remington Arms, that has been headquartered in Ilion, New York, since 1800, is moving to LaGrange, Georgia. And they're happy because it's bringing hundreds of jobs and tens of million dollars to the local economy. And they love guns down in Georgia, okay? Whereas in New York, they do not. Although we'll see what happens. We're still waiting to find out what's going to happen with the Supreme Court on that New York City CPL, you know, concealed weapons Supreme Court challenge that's going through. You know, and I here's one closer to our home. And I want to say, doesn't this just ring true to Governor Gretchen Whitmer vetoes bipartisan knife rights preemption law? Oh, yeah. Well, it's got something to do with a weapon, so it must be bad. Gretchen, this one, even your own Democrats backed as well as restoring knife rights for people to carry pocket knives and things like that. Nope. Can't sign that. Well, maybe she wasn't sure how to sign it, probably Dana Nessel had a hangover when she asked her about him. So, you know, hey, what do you think about this? Oh, knives. Oh, God, my head hurts. No, we don't want any new knife rights out there. Okay, then I'll veto it. What a bunch of crap, okay? So even when the rest of her party and the Republicans together come along and say, you know, this makes sense, we should have a knife rights bill. Nope, it gets vetoed because of the left's politics. It just really upsets me. Let's see. Now, I don't have time to get into this, but this is a question that was brought up, and a lot of people are making a big deal about it. And it's not that Biden necessarily did anything specific about it, but it's because we know of his true intentions. But the question is Biden attempting backdoor gun registration?
It's something that this paperwork is already out there. Why, you know, what's the big deal?
Well, it's because we know the intentions of the people that are proposing possible registration list. So at any rate, we'll talk about that in a bit. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk, 1692.7 FM. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Wham Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And the first thing I need to do is correct 734-822-1600. Derek said I said 882. And I'm thinking, well, geez, I've only been saying this number every week for almost 11 years now, okay? Over 10 years now, I've been on the radio, and every week I'm saying 822-1600, and then I had to blow it. So at any rate, if you're trying to call in, and we do have, gosh, there are three lines. It looks like the NORAD control center. Everything is lighting up here. So we've got, first of all, we've got Ed from Ypsilanti. Hi, Ed. How are you?
Hey, Dick.
Hi.
You talked about sighting in, and my father-in-law invited me to come out to his property. He's got, you know, acres and acres. And he had a 100-yard range set up, and he was sighting in his shotgun. And I saw, I took my AR and my AK out there also, and some pistols. Excuse me. My, I'm sorry about that. So anyways, he's shooting these slugs called Remington Copper Solid, and I guess you can't get them anymore. He has a rifled 12-gauge barrel, and so I mean, he's shooting $4 a slug downrange at a target. No wonder he didn't offer me an opportunity.
You know, I'm not sure of the Remington Copper Solid. I do know that there are. Now, was that in a Sabo? Was it in a plastic holder? Yeah.
Yep.
I'm not sure of that name, but I can tell you that there are dozens and dozens of really cool Sabo rounds out there that are. It totally like negates the fact when people said, oh, well, we're going to limit deer hunting downstate here to shotguns only. Well, necessity being the mother of invention, everybody came up with ways to have better bullets than old, good old lead slugs, you know. Used to be people would use rifled lead slugs in a smoothbore barrel. Well, that's by the wayside. So, yeah, there are some very, very expensive and very, very good rounds. They are, some of them are all copper. Some of them are, composite materials and stuff. They have a Sabo is like a little plastic carrier that will hold the round, and as it goes down the barrel, especially on a rifled slug, it'll grab easily onto the, it seals the gases, and it grabs onto the rifling and starts the spin of the round. And then when it exits the barrel, the plastic peels back, and the round, that big, heavy 400-grain, copper bullet or whatever it is that's left, is running down the range at high speed. So, yep, very cool thing.
I told him, yeah, I got that, and I told him I would look online, and I was surprised these things have been discontinued for a while. And then when I was looking for an appropriate substitute, it seemed like there wasn't one for a rifled barrel, that a lot of the slugs and sabots were rifled themselves and wanted to be out of a smoothbore barrel, which I found surprising. So you're saying there are substitutes, I just didn't find them.
Yeah, that's right. I'll look that up. Let me write that down on my list of guns and stuff here. I'm going to say he's shooting 12-gauge, right?
Yeah. Boy, I'll tell you, 100 yards. Well, he had a scope, and he put it right in there, you know, within about an inch of the bullseye first off.
Yep. Yep, isn't that amazing that they do very, very well? And so that's like the, and they're heavy. They're like 400 grains. It's like these people who thought, oh, well, we'll limit people to shotguns and they'll be short range. No, you take a 2,000 foot per second 400 grain bullet, it's going to go a long way. So, well, very good.
I was pleasantly surprised. I have red dots on both my rifles. And, of course, I'm not going to hunt with those down here. But I just wanted to see, you know, I just hadn't shot in a while, and I just wanted to take it out to 100 yards. And so the red dot was failing me, so I said, well, screw that. And so I flipped up the iron sights, and, man, I was as accurate as he was with iron sights at 100 yards that rifle, that scope and the shotgun.
The sight,
it amazed me.
The sights are good. It's usually our eyes that fail us, okay?
Well,
what happens?
It was a big group. It was
on paper. Oh,
I was wondering about Sergeant York. I mean, what kind of grouping did he have? You know what I mean? It was just good enough.
He was a young man, a minute of bad guy, right? They call it minute of, okay. Well, hey, thanks for calling, Ed.
All right, talk to you later.
Yep, bye. We've got Tom from Detroit on disappointing guns. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Here's a couple I was disappointed in, and now they're my favorites, or among my favorites. And they're both Savage bolt action rifles.
Yeah.
One's an excellent varmint rifle. It's a 223 with a heavy barrel.
Okay.
And you know, no problem. I shooting a groundhog out to 400 yards with it. It's got a nice 18 power scope on it. But what happened is I used to like to go out in the winter shooting at the range and. On cold days, it would go click instead of bang. And, the primer, it was too light of a strike on the primers. And that just really bothered me and disappointed me. And then on your show, I heard about a place that sold heavier springs for those, for that firing pin spring. And I ordered a couple and put them in. Might want to have a gunsmith do it if I had to make a little spring compressed gizmo and map it up. But I mean, now they're great, they come with a 28 pound in there from the factory, and I went with a 32 and a 36 in the other one, and yeah, they're working great now.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I remember that conversation that we had about that with the springs, and I'm glad it worked for you.
There was another thing I was going to mention about kind of a variation of what's on your hip. Just the other day, I was going out. I was in a hurry, and I had my LCP Ruger 380 in my pocket.
Right.
And, I thought, I'm not going anyplace that's really dangerous or anything like that, and I'm in a hurry. And then all of a sudden, I thought, nowadays, with all of these southern border open and these people, flooding over, I need to make it a habit to carry something with a little more range. And I grabbed my LC9, took the extra time.
Okay.
I shot that out to 75 yards before, and, it's very concealable and comfortable. So,
worry about it, especially in our area around here. It's not so much, I'm not sure about it border crossing, but it's carjackings and stuff like that that you got to worry about here.
Well, I'm thinking, sometime next year we might be seeing a lot of incidents like, there was that time in Texas where, somebody shouting Allah Akbar, shooting up the place with an AK, and the policeman dropped him with his service pistol and saved a lot of lives. But I'm thinking the armed citizen, that's what the militia is. That's the Second Amendment, the armed citizen. And I'm thinking that's the only defense against something like, I'm hearing millions of, there's millions of illegal crossings and stories about where, no good nicks are being infiltrated into these groups on purpose.
That is true. And everybody has to remain vigilant. And there's a reason why there are 764,000 CPL holders in Michigan and around the country. There's millions and millions of them. So. Well,
I feel sorry for Chicago or New York and places like that. People living there, it's going to be tough, I'm thinking.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the call today, Tom. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. We have got Jeff from Ypsilanti on an AR-10. Cool platform. What's your comment there?
Well, it's a little bit of a disappointment. I just wanted to say I enjoy your show, as always. But I had a brand-new one. New in the box. I've had it for months. I finally had an opportunity to take it out somewhere where I could actually shoot it and be safe with it. And anyway, I get down to it. I was using their Lake City rounds at 308.
Okay.
And it started out okay shooting, and then all of a sudden they just started jamming up. I would get a shot in, and then when the bolt throws back to the rear, ejects the shell, the next shell comes in. I don't know if it's not going in all the way or but when I go to pull the trigger on that, it's like the trigger is already halfway collapsed and it doesn't even work. Then when I go to pull the round out with the charging handle, because I'm thinking it's jammed, I could barely get it out. I really had to work that sucker.
Now, that is interesting. I have seen people have problems with I want to say, actually, not on an AR, but on a Mini 14 platform, when they're using some of the Russian rounds with the lacquered finishes and stuff. But now you're using standard Lake City ammo, Lake City Arsenal ammo, brass rounds, right?
Yes.
Now you, I want to say, did you attempt to use the forward assist, or does your AR not have a forward assist on it?
No, it's got a forward assist on it, and it seemed like it worked okay, but it just didn't, you know, I hit it a couple of times on one, I still couldn't get anywhere with it, so I ended up having to eject the round out with the charging handle, but
That really surprises me. What brand is the AR?
It's a Palmetto. I thought it was supposed to be a really good brand, but and it probably still is. I don't know if it's the ammunition I'm using or if there's something wrong with the trigger. It doesn't want to reset, or if the gas block needs to be adjusted and it's not operating at high enough pressure to eject the round.
But you're actually saying that you are extracting a round, but you're not getting a forward, you're not getting it back into battery, right?
Right.
So it's got to be, there's only a couple of things that could be, okay? One is, does your AR happen to have a match barrel and a match chamber on it?
It's got a heavy barrel on it. I don't know if you would call it match.
Okay. Because sometimes you will have chambers that are, see, by the way, a lot of military chambers are looser, but you can have a tight chamber. Now, if you continue to have an issue, I would try another brand of ammo. I would try a Hornady brand, a Black Hills brand, something other than just a military Lake City Arsenal brand, okay?
Right.
And this Lake City ammo that you've got is first-time shot, brand new ammo. It's not reloaded.
I don't know. It didn't say on the advertisement when I bought it, but you know, here, stupid me, I'm thinking, well, if it's good enough for the military, it should be okay for my rifle.
Well, I want to say sometimes you get stuff. If you bought it from an off-brand place and it wasn't branded as brand new, it could be one-time reloads. Okay. And so that depends on how they did with chamber sizing on it. So I want to say, first thing I would do is try different ammo and try a good quality brand of ammo. Try, like I said, Hornady.
Well, I just want Black Hills, so that ought to be good enough there. I think that's top of the line as far as I know.
Yeah, it is. And if you've got some of that, but also have you... What did you notice when you cleaned the gun afterwards?
I haven't got around to cleaning it yet.
Okay, because you may have some buildup of something in the. Imagine this here: you bought a gun that it sat around for a few months or a while, and as the manufacturers, they don't know how long a gun is going to sit until it gets shot. So the oils and stuff that they use on it are more for rust prevention and preservation as opposed to lubrication, okay? And if it dried up, it gummed up, and then you went and fired it, did you clean it before you shot it?
No, I did not.
So man, that's the first thing I would do is I would go out and take that gun apart and clean it really well. Make sure you've got a chamber brush for it. Do you know what a chamber brush is for on your AR-10?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
You know how it's got for the little flutes on the end of the bolt and stuff? And, you know, so that you get that very, very clean. You may have had a buildup of gumminess in there left over from the preservation oils that Palmetto put on it. Because Palmetto, now, by the way, a manufacturer could have done something wrong and had a machining issue or could have had a tight chamber on it or something like that. But first thing I would do is clean it really well. I'd clean the end of the bolt where you've got your splines and stuff and use your chamber brush and everything, lube it up. And then go out and try it with the Black Hills ammo. And if it's working great, or some, you know, Black Hills or Hornady or something like that, if it's working great, then go back and try that Lake City ammo, and you may find you might have had a contamination issue.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll do that. Yeah, it was probably just common sense is what's killing me here.
But so don't be disappointed in it. A Palmetto State Armory AR 10 ought to be an outstanding gun. I love, see, that's where people talk about, oh, these modern sporting rifles. Well, as actually the assault weapons, they're not good for anything but killing people. And go, well, wait a minute, what about an AR-10 or you know, with a shooting a .308 and that's great for hogs and, you know, all this kind of stuff, and for deer, and you know, it's the bias that people have against them, but they are a wonderful tool for anybody, and you can have them from the smallest little 223 up through a 50 caliber big bore, which is what I've got, and I love it. So,
I like the rifle. It's, you know, it's definitely heavier than an AR-15, but I wanted to ask you one more thing,
sure.
And then I'll let you go here. Now these have come with a gas block on it. So what is the gas block for? Is that for adjusting the pressure depending on the type of rounds that you use?
I want to say the adjustable gas block. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. And it's a regular direct gas impingement gun. It's not a piston gun?
That I couldn't tell you.
Okay. The thing is that an adjustable gas block is, does it have a threaded barrel for a suppressor?
Yes.
Yeah. The adjustable gas block is because what needs to happen, depending on the ammo that you're shooting, you may have to have a different amount of gas pressure to move your bolt back to eject eject, and then pick up a new round. And so what happens is, especially with people who are shooting suppressed, they put on a suppressor. Now that actually affects the way the gas affects the function, but also people often shoot subsonic rounds, which mean they shoot slower rounds that have less gas pressure. Okay, and so they need to turn up the gas to use as much as they can to be able to eject a round. And then if they're using a full power round and not a suppressor, they may need to turn it down so it's not slamming the bolt back so hard. You see what I'm saying?
Okay, so it depends on how hot the load is and how much the round weighs?
It's a combination of how hot the load is and how heavy the round is. A subsonic round can often be a heavier round because you're just trying to push it slower.
Right.
Okay? You've got multiple things going on there. So you might take a look, read into your instructions and stuff, and see what it says. If it says, you know, for shooting subsonic rounds with a suppressor, turn the gas block this way, and if you're shooting normal rounds, turn it the other way. That type of thing. Okay.
Okay. Well, let me say one more thing, and I'll let you go here. If you let me get one more.
Sure. Minute. Go ahead.
Where would be a good place to take that to, like a range, like maybe Top Gun or somebody, or somewhere that people are familiar with it? I know they have an indoor rifle range. I don't know if I could take that there and shoot it or not, but I mean, it'd be nice to have like a training course to go through the whole thing of just how to handle it, how to set it up, what I need to look for, what problems I'm having with it.
You're calling from IPSI, right?
Yes.
Okay. You've got probably a couple of places that you can choose. I do know that that Ann Arbor Arms has rifle ranges. Some ranges don't allow heavy-duty rifles, okay?
Right.
Some of them are older. They only can accommodate lighter and pistol rounds and things like that. But Ann Arbor Arms... The firing line in Westland, they have the ability, and they have people there that can help you with that as well. But also so does Ann Arbor Arms. So I want to say I would check into and see who has training. I don't know. There's one out in New Hudson. There's a new one out there that I believe has rifle ranges too. I forget what it's called. But check to see if somebody's got a carbine class, okay? Because
that's what my rifle is, a carbine class.
Yeah, well, essentially an AR platform is a carbine platform, although there are ones with longer barrels. But the thing is that most of the time they call them carbine self-defense classes, things like that. Something to do with that, because those are the guys that will have a tactical knowledge of things like suppressors and adjustable gas blocks and stuff like that.
Okay, great.
Okay, very good.
Thanks. As always, appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks for calling. Thank you, sir. So, gosh, that was fun to talk about all those things. And see, that's where something that can start out as a disappointment, both Tom from Detroit and the gentleman from Jeff, I think it was, from Ypsilanti, they said, well, maybe I got a bit of a disappointment because they're having a problem. But then it turns out that it's not really a problem, okay, or it's not something that they can't overcome. I think you'll find probably the chamber was gummed up and stuff, but also that gas block is an interesting wild card in there, because if it was turned up or turned down, it could be doing, you know, you got to find just the right mix for the ammo. And so that's why he needs to check into his paperwork and see what they recommend as the initial setting, and then how they talk about going up or down. Because if he, although it's probably right where it was set, because he didn't even clean it before he shot it, so he probably, it was like out of the box, a normal setting. But you don't know, so you got to figure that all out. So that's where an initial disappointment can turn into a gun that you love eventually. He's going to love that AR-10 by the time he gets that thing dialed in, okay? So, gosh, what fun. Now, I started to talk about, that's fine, I maybe this will save till next week, but is Biden attempting backdoor gun registration? And what it is that people are worried. I think this is... essentially, this has always been the way it's set up, where if a gun store, when they do your your paperwork, when you buy a gun, you buy it and you fill out a 4473, and they call in and do the NICS check and stuff, but they also keep a copy of the records. It's required for them to keep a copy in their records. And that's part of the system where if they're looking for a gun, you know, from a crime or something, and they can trace it back, normally they're stolen anyway, so it doesn't make any difference. But the point is that the gun store keeps the records. And so what happens is there is a requirement that when gun stores go out of business, that they have to turn over their records to the ATF, who will then store them quite nicely for you, okay? Which everybody is worried that that is going to become a de facto gun registration. And so what can happen is, let's say in an age where a lot of businesses are going out of business because of they can't get ammo, they can't get guns, whatever. Also, a lot of businesses are going out of business when somebody ages out and retires, okay? They decide, I've been doing this, I'm 85 years old now, and I'm not going to do it anymore. Well, when they shut down the business, they have to turn in all the records of all those thousands of guns they sold over the years to the ATF. And the concern is, and actually Ronald Reagan did a thing back in 86 called the Firearm Owners Protection Acts, and the law contained a clause that said no rule or regulation may require that records required to be maintained under this chapter or any portion of the content of such records be recorded at or transferred to a facility owned, managed, or controlled by the United States or any state or any political subdivision thereof, nor that any system of registration of firearms, firearms owners, or firearms transaction or depositions or dispositions be established. Well, people are worried that, especially if they'd gotten that, what's his name, the guy that was going to be the ATF head in. Are you kidding me? Oh, yeah, I trust them that they're not going to keep it as a record. Sure, they'll gather all the records up, but they're not going to look at them, okay? That's where that's coming from. And I think that we need some little things to be more established that that what happens to those records cannot be used to establish a gun registration. Because they even said back in 1969, I think, or 68, that, or 86, that they, what they wanted to do was essentially get to where all guns are registered, and then we can go for confiscation. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at WHAM Talk 1600. I'll see you next week.